love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings. After the long weekend, I have a lot of things that I think I hope you find interesting, and I hope some of it's encouraging. But of course, I got another postcard. I got it Saturday from Zadok. Zadok sent me I sent a postcard to Zadok, and it's refused. Return to sender. Interesting. On the postcards, you know, my stack of fresh ones is down to, just maybe a little over a week's supply. So the intent was to go tomorrow to get new ones printed, but I got so distracted today. I do have the artwork done, but I got distracted today because there's other things I want to do in that process, which may actually relate to some of the other things. But anyway, I've had a number of good interactions over the weekend, and one is kind of light. I won't go into it much, and the other I'll go into a little bit more depth. But one was with my friend who's a Latter-day Saint. We've been going back and forth for some time when I did the discussion about Jesus as the Creator who entered His creation to redeem His elect. I set that proposal to several people, and he's one of the ones that responded in some depth and indicated where we agree and where we disagree. And, you know, because they are polytheist, there's a lot of interesting differences. But, you know, I have read, you know, they have what they call it the quad, four books, the Bible, the Doctrines and Covenants, the Book of Mormon, and the Pearl of Great Price. I've read some of Doctrines of Covenants. I've read some of the Book of Mormon, but I haven't read any of Pearl of Great Price until this weekend, because there was the creation stories there, because there's the Book of Abraham and the Book of Moses within that. And so I read, it's fairly short, so I basically read it all, I think. And then I responded to my friend. And it took a while. Had numerous points to question, because I did it Sunday evening. I was getting tired, and I said, "Well, this is a kind of a draft." He said, and his response was a response of joy and excitement. Someone who disagrees responding, "Yes, let's continue this dialogue." I find that a joy. It's interesting. He and I foundationally disagree, but the dialogue continues. It's been continuing now for years. Within the PCA, they run and hide. It really is amazing. I mean, I can't express how amazing I find that to be. I'm grateful for that. But, you know, my friend Chris and I, we've also had a discussion, a lot of things related to Romans 14. I mean, we've been going back and forth in that for years, because it's too easy just to give a surface thing and move on. So we've been going over that and over that and over that. And one of the things he you know, I state specifically about, you know, the Bible is true and the institutional church is a fraud. And I make that stand. And he addresses it slightly differently. His concern is the hierarchy. And so we had a discussion on both those things. And on the Romans 14, the call about your brother will stand before the Lord, because the Lord holds him, not you. So there's no point in looking up or down at somebody because of a different set of understandings, specifically in what day of the week they would set aside, whether or any day, whether they eat meat or nothing, or pork or nothing, or they drink wine or nothing. These are kind of the questions. And it isn't that one is superior to the other. But the focus is on the judgmental aspect. And the thing that really got to me in our conversation is there is the way we act towards others in that context. In other words, do I look at you as somehow either more refined or less refined, closer to God or further away from God because of what you do or don't do? And do I act in such a way to kind of put you off in a different realm that you don't have what I have in the relationship with Christ? So it's the way I'm acting towards others. Do I do that? But the other aspect of it, which I think is consistent with Romans 14, it's not as much as what I act, because I have found, especially over time, that I can act graciously towards others with a different perspective. But my heart toward them, has it changed? I really, because that was the thing that was so important. My attitude, you know, when I look at myself, and of course, Chris agreed that he saw the same in himself. My attitude as a matured, as a follower of Christ, is to not look at somebody with a different doctrinal understanding and practice in a demeaning way. I find I can actually do that, but I've noticed there's a difference between what I do and what I'm thinking in my heart. And there seems to be the doing came first, and I think I've progressed a good ways on that, but in the heart I've progressed some, but I can see there's more maturing to do. And this, you know, again, I think this is digging deep into, I think, the purpose of, or, you know, the doctrine being set down in Romans 14. But the other aspect of that is because it's the Lord who holds that other person who is different than you in whatever way. Because it is the Lord who is the mediator. And this was the other aspect of this thing, because the mediator, when you put a man in between, especially in an institutional environment, you put a man between you and the Lord, he becomes your mediator or your archy. And again, Chris he strongly uses, and you know, not in a flattering way, the idea of hierarchy. And so, you know, I said, okay, you know, I can see that. I can see where when you have an institution and therefore you have a hierarchy, you're putting somebody in between you and the Lord. That made sense. But of course, I had to go further. And what I found was fascinating because, you know, I do have this habit of studying the etymology of words, where they came from. What is hierarchy? Because we use it all the time. Is it in the Bible? Well, no. Not as hierarchy. But hierarchy is hieros and archy, whatever. It's reversed. It's archy and hieros, whatever. Chief priest. You'll see the term chief priest used over and over again in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. There's chief priests, which is the hieros, I don't know if I got that right, is the priest. And archy, obviously, is the one that's first, therefore the chief. But there's also high priests. It's megas, or, you know, we're getting mega. So it's you're the mega priest or the archy priest, literally that's what it is, and I found that fascinating. So when we talk about hierarchy, and you look at the etymology of the word, where does it come from? It has that priestly heritage in the hierarchy It comes from, again, chief priest or priest first. And I found that fascinating. So even though Chris and I are using different terms and going after it slightly different, well, it's fairly different. His focus is on hierarchy, and my focus is basically the institution itself. Because, again, I go to the, you know, what I've come to is you know, the Genesis 1:28, which has really been, in a very real sense, a very life-changing verse. That, and of course, Genesis 1:1, when, because again, in the beginning, the first part of creation is time itself, and that just blows me away. But anyway, but the, you know, Genesis 1:28, the be fruitful and multiply, God's first command to man, which obviously got me in trouble in the pro-life community in the 90s. But the then, you know, to take dominion, to be the, literally the overlord of the earth, plants and animals, but not over another man, which you see in the Gospels using the same terminology. And so the idea of an intermediary, another mediator, it's also consistent with the idea you should have no other gods before me, you know, in which, you know, in a sense is there's no mediator. So I would suggest there is a consistent theme. Again, I contend the Bible is consistent. But to put this all together and to see that when we talk about hierarchy, we see effectively the same words used in the scripture as chief priests. And I just found that fascinating because, and again, that is the etymology of the English word. So, I mean, fascinating stuff. One other thing happened. Well, several years ago, actually, what, 1,000 years ago or so, I think it was like 4th, 5th century, whatever, a building was built in Turkey. Well, modern-day Turkey. Modern-day Istanbul. I think it's in Istanbul. It's known as the Hagia Sophia. At the time, it was one of the largest buildings in the world. Huge dome and so forth. It was a church and then became a mosque back to it. Then it became a museum in like the 1930s, I think. But a couple of years ago, it became a mosque again. And this has caused a bit of an uproar for those who were involved. But this, one of the things, I think the reason we don't see much about this is because this is more focused on the Eastern Orthodox mentality, because the building is very ornate and so forth, and has a lot of those characteristics. But there was a group of people who said, this is wrong, that Turkey is turning it from a museum. It was turned into a museum so that the Christian and Muslim communities could effectively coexist, even though the bulk of the artwork in there is Christian. And what they literally did, they covered it up. They put sheets and whatnot, you know, large cloth to cover up the artwork and the various icons and so forth. Now, you know, so this happened a couple of years ago, and what's followed up with that is a group in not too far away in Syria said, this is wrong. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a a miniature version of it in the local community in the Idlib area, which if you know about what's happening in modern day Syria, obviously Idlib is a place that is still very much controlled by the Islamic terrorists. So there are a lot of things happening there. So this started, and it's a place called, and I don't know if I, Al Sequil Yibbe. Anyway, I'm not the pronunciation reference on that. But so they started building this relatively small, a church. I mean, this is, and it was started some time ago. It's been fascinating what's been happening with that in the artwork. It is very much Eastern Orthodox, and so that's been being was built. And last weekend, there was an opening ceremony. But issues occurred. And as several have pointed out, you probably didn't hear about this in the Western media. And actually, I did a search, didn't find a thing. But so what happened is some time before, there were a lot of attacks by the terrorists. And in recent days, there were nearby missile strikes from Israel. Because you have to understand, Israel does between 1 and 200 attacks into Syria every year. You know, missiles, airstrikes, they take their planes or they just fire missiles into Syria. It's happening constantly. But of course, that doesn't make the news. Sometimes, often the missiles are shot out of the air by the S-300s, the Russian defense system. They have the S-400s there. Apparently, they haven't used them yet for political reasons, I guess. But occasionally, sometimes missiles hit things like, I think in the last several weeks, hit the Damascus airport. Did some damage. But anyway. But some attack occurred near this area where this church is being built. And this is like last week that it occurred. And so there was some tension there. But then they had roughly 1,000 people at this relatively small place, because the building itself is relatively small. And there's a video of it. Some guy, apparently he does a lot of wedding videos, but because he has the flying camera kind of stuff. And he did a beautiful 5-minute video, just, you know, painting around and whatnot. It really, the camera work, the artistry in the camera work was very good. Plus, you see the artistry in the building. Again, it's very Eastern Orthodox. And I have some of the pictures. It's very Eastern Orthodox, but it's still, this is a Christian community in Syria. And what I found fascinating is they had some dignitaries there. They had somebody, a Russian dignitary, some other foreign, Hungary, I think was mentioned, from other relatively nearby countries. And they also had some Muslims to come there to celebrate with the Christian community the dedication of their building, which is fascinating. And what fascinated me the most is some of those Muslims were Sunni Muslims. You know, Sunni is what you would see like Saudi Arabia. Shia is what you see in Iran. And Iran has a closer tie to Syria than Saudi Arabia, obviously. well, obviously, if you're anything, but anyway. But I found that fascinating. And so there's this gathering of people. And, the information was kind of hard to put together because things changed and the reporting is a little... but there was an attack by two drones. They call them kamikaze drones, you know, because they fly with the intention of being destroyed. You know, it's a one-time use drone. An attack was done. Apparently, Turkish drones made in Turkey who actually fired them off, clearly a terrorist group. But provided by Turkey, apparently. The thing that was fascinating is it was caught on video. And when I saw, it was unclear what happened, because one of the things that's pointed out, there was a statue that was put there. The statue was put there to honor a man from a couple of years ago who was killed in the process, apparently, saving other people's lives. His statue saved other people's lives today, which I found yesterday. I found fascinating. So even his death, he's still doing work in an interesting sense. But there's the picture of some people. You can see some people walking around in the background, and the explosion. And the explosion was right there, and there's a man standing there where the explosion happened. He's dead. Apparently, he didn't die immediately, but died sometime later. And apparently, a second person died. So two people died. They weren't immediate deaths. And I found this fascinating, because one, we don't hear about this. If this happened to Ukraine, oh, you'd hear about it. It happened in Syria. You don't hear about it. It happened to the Christian community in Syria, so you don't hear about it. But, you know, I found this interesting. I see a joy in that community there. I'm tremendously fascinated by the artwork. But one other thing hit home. Well, two other things hit home really hard. One is, it was not too far away from this man's home. He's in a nearby city. This is Shadi Sheda. He lost his family in a similar attack a few years ago. And he's on my wall. You know, I've mentioned that I feel a bond to a man in Vietnam, Phuc Thong, because of the work he does in his ministry towards the unborn children, living and dead. You know, he has thousands upon thousands in his three personal graveyards that he buries. And to see him grab a child with his bare hands to put it in a little clay pot, I have a respect for that man. We're very different. I said similar things about a man in Nigeria, in Senegal. But where the cluster of them, of those people that really have kind of touched me, has been Syria. Obviously, Shadi Sheda. And there was a young guy that I saw several years ago. I need to find the picture of him. He reminded me so much of George. There was a young girl who, during an incident where there was a terrorist attack, a young girl who got bloodied but survived, reminded me so much of Tirza. So in a sense, I saw my family there. And then, of course, my picture. And, you know, but the thing that got to me, again, one was the picture. But the other is, here's a tragedy that no one knows about. Or you kind of write off because you put in with other things. And so you don't say, here is part of my fellow Christian community. You know, there's the idea of love, especially the brotherhood. Especially the brotherhood. These people are Syrian. And they will stand before the Lord redeemed because of the same Redeemer that I follow. We don't speak the same language. We're part of the same community. But they're ignored. It's, you know, because again, they're not Ukrainian. And I see that in another way. The guy in Tennessee, ignore him. He's not in North Carolina. It's the same thing, isn't it? Anyway. Other things, but that's enough for today. I delight in having a serious dialogue with somebody I disagree with. In, you know, in my case, it's been the LDS community, because there have been multiple people. I've been striving for the Islamic community or the atheist. Atheists tend to run, you know, like the harmonic atheist, Eric Lee, Jack, maybe my wife. I don't know. I mean, again, what's the difference in the way in lifestyle? I mean, really, what's the difference in lifestyle? I'm delighted that I have those interactions. I was really encouraged by, you know, when we talked about the way in the Romans 14 and the idea of the way we act towards others, the way I act towards others, and the way our heart is towards others. That was insightful. And it's kind of like, oh, I need to think about this. Am I living well in that? And then, of course, the idea of the Lord's mediation for all, like the people in Syria, same mediator. And, of course, the etymology of the word hierarchy. That was so fascinating. That really was fascinating. I find that fascinating. But, well, one last thought on, you know, because, again, the Hagia Sophia, again, this massive building in Turkey. And, yes, the artwork is amazing. I've seen a lot of the pictures, especially before they were covered up. Massive building, tremendous art, very interesting engineering, because especially considering it's over 1,000 years old. So that's fascinating. And the artwork of this miniature version of it, very miniature version of it, in Syria, I respect the artwork, the quality of the workmanship, and so forth. But it's an institution. So a struggle I have is there's a difference between, okay, we have the institution that gives me the ability to do the art. Because again, people who have, you know, again, some of the things I have on my wall here, especially from John Painter, phenomenal stuff. Or from even like, from, I have stuff from Julia, for example. Phenomenal stuff. But the connection to the institution is I still got to work that one through. Again, goes to the Romans 14 type questions. But anyway, I want my wife to know. I love her. You know, the cards, I'm getting close to the end of the wall here, and there's one more to put up there. I love her. In spite of, again, I call that the wall of hate, because that is hate. But I love her. I have the ability. It goes back to the Romans 14. It's one thing the way you act towards others, the other is the heart towards others. My wife, her acting towards me is clearly one of hate. I'm striving to act towards my wife in love. And even though I'm flawed when I act towards other people, to my wife, I love you wholeheartedly, unambiguously. I love you wholeheartedly. If you open the door to communications. I will communicate with you graciously and honestly, only seeking reconciliation. My Lady, I love you and I want you back.